years later, they left.
Yeah. That's it.
4 years later, your parents came?
Four years later, your parents came? Yeah. 4 years later. With five children?
They came here and the borders closed. America did not give in any...
Immigration
bureau closed in 1924. And the way they came, did you see that silver I showed you? Silver linen. I still have a couple of scarves that I embroidered when I was young, you know. And the linen and everything they had, they possessed for 35 years. Their home. They sold their home for gold coins. But there was an agent. He told them they had to pack away the coins. He watched them load up the wagon, the linens, whatever clothing was left. Five or six dozen of that silver there. Jewelry, whatever my mother could save from all the robberies and everything. The agent came around and said, he's taking families across the border. Everybody wanted to run away.
Imagine.
My father had a substantial size of a home. And they got packed, loaded the wagons. The agent came around, he took 22 people out of that town, promising them, you'll take them across the border, and on the way, they'll be able to go away to this country. And he took them out no more than about 250 miles away from town. And at night, they had to, no, pull out that chair because I'm small and I couldn't fit in there.
Pull it out.
That's better. Okay. And 22 people, about four or five families they had. Some had relatives in this country. And of course I was here already with my husband, my older brother, the oldest. And the one that passed away, you know, Bernie and Edith's father. They were here, so we were here four people. And they were coming here to live here with us. So the agent took them out on two wagons, all their baggage, whatever they had. All their money, he told them where to hide it and not to pack it away. Took them out about 250 miles out of town into a forest. And at night, he sent up a couple of his own men on horses and beat up all the people. And undressed them naked, took away the luggage.
That's how it is.
Took everything away and left them naked. My mother was wearing a nightgown. She says, I'm an older woman. Give me at least my coat. How can I go around in a nightgown? Everybody else was naked, just in their nightgowns. They took the shoes off because they had money hidden in the heels. He told them what to do with it, but then they took the shoes off them. So he gave my mother the coat to wear. In the morning, they were naked, hungry, and completely helpless. My mother took one of the boys and she walked. She says, I'm not afraid to walk in the field. Maybe we'll meet a home or people or something. She walked for miles and miles and came to a farm. And this farm, and she told them the story. My father was naked and he had a temperature. One of my brothers lay down on the grass, my father was laying down on top of him. He shouldn't get worse with his fever. And all the other women and children were hanging around there naked. My mother went there and she got the farmer and she told him what happened. He says, well, I have a wagon, I can go and bring him in here. But all I can offer you is the effort. He says, you know, there's no no law, police, or anything around here. It was still before just at the edge of the border, across his fields, that was Collins already. He says, I can hold you over on the attic, I can give you some food for a while, until some of you will get to the city and bring in the welfare letter and take care of you. So she pleaded with him, gave her a wagon. My mother came back and she picked up all of them on the wagon, and they came to that ground. Well, he held them over about 4 days. He brought my mother to the border. She should go into that city to see the welfare people. They can do something for them. So my mother came to a welfare station, and she stayed in line with my younger sister, the one in India, and stayed in line for bread. As she stays in line, there sees a young man that was going with my older brother to school in our town, originally in Russia, you know, it was a high school. And since my father had his own home, so one of my brothers was going to high school. And this boy that she met at the welfare station, his parents owned the sugar refinery, 18 miles away from our town. So this boy used to room with us in the winter time when he was going to school here. And then he saw my mother. He says, Mrs. Rosen, what are you doing here? I don't have to tell you the scene. And they fell on each other's shoulders, and she says, this is what happened. My husband is sick. He's running a temperature. Everybody's naked and hungry. So you gave her a couple of loaves of bread, and you took her in the back room, and you gave her clothing. He says, whoever the clothing fits, let them come into the city. I got room for them. See, in the Ukraine, there is no taverns, there is tea houses. This organization was like in a huge building, it's like a tea house. They boil big boilers with water, and everybody drinks tea.
From the simmer, I think.
Yeah. So he says, I got room for as many of you as you can come. But take some of that clothing and see who can fit into it. Well, little by little, they came in here. And my mother brought the 2 loaves of bread. My sister, that's married to Dr. Mishkin, she ran over and she stole a quarter of a bread and she hid it under a pillow.
So hungry.
There were 7 of them to eat. All of a sudden, a part of a loaf of bread was disappeared. That's her character. I had to stop to tell it all because she knows what I'm talking about.
Well, if it was so chaotic, who set up these welfare stations where they could get the food?
Well, they were already
in Poland. That was in Poland. That was in Russia.
In Poland was like you have here the outreach welfare stations in this country now. That's what they had there. Because
like when the colored people come from the south up here, that's where they had to go. They
everybody were rushing in from the Ukraine, refugees of all sorts. Men from the army, the families from the army, men that died. Everybody was in the welfare. So he says, well, anyway.
Oh, they'd have had a revolution.
My mother,
they hadn't had the welfare thing.
My mother brought the family in there, and my father came there, and this young man gave her $100. He came from Belt people, you know. The sugar refineries, his father had 3 of them, not far from our town. And he sent us a telegram to this country about that. He put my father in a hospital in Poland because he developed typhoid fever. And she stayed there about 2-3 weeks until we sent him money. He cabled money to them.
And he rose with him, you see.
To that welfare station. And he seemed to it that they get transportation to Warsaw.
He rose was already in this country.
Yeah. They came to Warsaw, which is the capital city of Poland. There were thousands of refugees from Russia, from the Ukraine or White Russia or Latvia or what have you. They were all there, so there is where they stayed about 5-6 months until they came. They were, couldn't come in here, but we had a very wonderful break, and I don't want to speak about it because it's over. Why should I speak about it? But a very wonderful man in this country helped us bring to me.
You mean that senator from Indiana?
Senator.
What, Ahart, or what was his name?
Beardsley.
I often read about him. He was a wonderful senator, but he was very outstanding.
His family fought off Elkhart, Mr. Walker Golson, several small settlements there. They fought him off from the Indians. His family fought him off from the
Seriously,
Indians.
Seriously, I read about him.
And he is, he was the senator of Indiana at that time, and he helped his family. That was a miracle in this world. So this story, my sister, the one that lives in New York, she has a book written up about it, but she never told you. She had written up this much. She's the one that, she knew Hebrew, Latin, French, in German and English. She wrote an English letter to the senator. Before they left, in those couple of weeks they were getting ready, she wrote him an English letter. And he came with the letter to my brother, and he says, maybe they're not so bad off. If they know English there, they can take jobs in the consulate. My brother looked at him. Who knew that she knows English? In the first place, we were parted. I was parted with them for 4 years, but my two brothers were here almost 9 years before the war started. So they were surprised to know that she knew English. But it was a great time. I suppose I didn't tell you 1/5 of the story, what actually happened. I should tell you that one of the bandits that organized in our town, his name was Petlura. He robbed the bank, he robbed the government treasurer. There was a building that was the government treasurer. The railroad people would get their wages from that treasury bank. And they robbed the hospital, and they robbed, there was a wealthy Jewish family, the name was, there were three sons, two were lawyers, the father had a bakery going bakery, and there was a third one, a student, and that family was killed out, but all their possessions was robbed by this general, the Kluwer. And when Hetman took power and he threw him over as a leader, he ran away with all the fortune to Paris. And one of these two brothers, the lawyer, followed him. He hid himself in the haystack. They had cows and whatever. They were wealthy people. He hid himself in the haystack, and when everything was over and Hetman took power, he managed to get out of the country. He came to Paris and he followed Petlura. Petlura settled with all his treasures. He settled in France, hoping that someday he's going to come back to Russia and be a general again. And this Krasner, the two brothers, the lawyers, their names were Krasner. They were my age. The middle one and the younger one were my age. The older one was a little older, but the two of them, the older and the middle one, they were lawyers. And the oldest one came to Paris and followed Petlura every day of his life. He used to live in a palace somewhere in France. I don't know the details where he lived. But Krasner took a hotel room across the street. And then Petlura went for a walk with his protectors, you know.
Guards.
And one nice day, early in the morning, he killed him. This Krasner, the lawyer, he killed Petlura, and when he killed him, he gave himself up to the French government. And he told him the story, and he told him why he killed him. He says, he killed my three sisters, my father and mother, and one of my brothers. And on the fortune we have had from generations, he came to Paris and we lived as a general. He says, well, I'll cut his life short. and you can do whatever you think the law has to do for me. And you know they freed him. There was a trial in France, and there was a book written by this Krasner about the whole story, the case and the trial and everything. I used to know the name of the book. I forgot the name. I should have bought it, but you know, in those early years when I came here and I had so much trouble of my own, I couldn't read everything I wanted to read. I didn't follow up, but I'm sorry I didn't get a hold of that book because my boyfriends, I grew up with them.
Yeah.
The situation and the whole story that I've lived through with them. In a way, when he killed Petlura, I was happy because I had seen 45 people he killed in one morning when he built himself up with an army in my town. I tell you one thing, if you saw Zhivago, every detail in that picture is true.
Did you see Zhivago?
Every detail in that picture is true. And
Rose and I went to see it the first time together.
And
then I went to see it by myself. Because I couldn't connect it. You know, we went to see it downtown there, and that show.
He was a writer. He wanted to be an individual in Russia, to write his own way of thinking, his own way of living.
He was on either side.
He was from a very wealthy family, but the press at the time in his life, the press was controlled by the government, and he couldn't write. He was not allowed. And the name of the picture, Zhivago, means a life. Zhivago means life. Zhizn is life. Zhivago means a living person. That's what he named the book, Zhivago. In other words, he was an author. He was from very wealthy people. He lived for himself. He wanted to write for himself. So he named the book A Life. I'm a Life. He named the book Life. And he wrote it. That was every word of it. Every word. I've seen it more than once. Do you recognize my waves?
Yeah. What about it?
Nothing. Finally, I came back to my old hairdo.
Yeah, she always, you know, she used to be a blonde.
I used to be.
And she had a, that's natural wavy hair.
I had a beautiful hair.
Oh, yeah, she was blonde when I knew her.
Yeah, you know what I do? I stop going to the beauty parlor for a shampoo and set.
Oh, well, I just go for a permanent.
I don't need a permanent. Here it is.
I
washed my hair
last
day. All my waves are coming back just the way they used to be. The only thing is the color changed.
And you got a good thing over there.
Yeah, it's going all along. If I just put my finger in it.
Rose is not quite as old as I am, but getting up there.
I'm not much younger than you. Maybe 2 years.
Were you born in this town that you're talking about?
Yeah,
I was born and raised
there. Well, my daughter was born in
Russia. My daughter was 8 months old when I brought her here with the refugee train. My husband was holding on to her and sitting on top of the sack to save me.
From the soldiers.
Could you describe that town a little bit? Was it mostly farmers or?
No, it was a railroad.
It was a railroad center. They called them railroad centers. That's what they call, like here. Different railroads come in there and shipping and everything.
It was a railroad center, just like Chicago's a Midwestern center town.
Chicago used to be called a railroad center too, yeah. You know, when the railroad
came there. Our town was more east, but we were between east and south, southeast, towards Romania and Bulgaria and the Serbian countries.
You were closer to Yugoslavia, and that's from there, huh?
Well, we were closer to Austria.
Oh, yeah.
We were closer to Austria, and then...
I know geography.
Yugoslavia, Hungary, and all that. See, and Latvia was further north in Russia.
I know.
In the southeast corner. The town was strictly a railroad town, and it was beautiful life there. It was a beautiful small town. the gorgeous orchards. My mother had pears in the backyard hanging almost a pound apiece. We had cherries, we had plum trees all around the place.
We had no pollution or anything to hurt anything.
We had
our own
water well. We had our own cows. My mother had a big family. She had 12 children. In a backyard.
She had a hotel.
And two kitchens. Two porches, one in the back of the building, one in the front of the building. We had a basement. I could write a book about the basement.
Yeah, wine and vegetables.
It was out of this world. It
they had to store everything in there for winter.
It was built from telephone posts.
Oh, yeah.
Telegraph posts. Russia didn't have telephone system.
Telegraph
posts.
In the ground.
In the ground. It go down about 8-9 steps into the basement. And in there it was like a structure by itself. With all these heavy posts. You can imagine that we had three trees on top of the basement growing. One of it would give us 9-10 sacks of apples.
See, they had no pollution, they had no insects or nothing. Everything was more pure.
On the basement, the apple trees were russets. Russets, yeah, you know, that brown skin. One of them would give us 8-9 sacks of apples. And we'd pickle everything. We pickled watermelon, cucumbers, apples. We put on hay, dried out hay, a couple of wagons of it. We'd put it down in one corner of the basement and we'd stick fruit in there. Apples or pears.
Keep it from freezing.
Keep it from freezing in the basement. We'd cook geese and make sausage and hang it up in the ceiling around the basement. Oh, it was terrific.
You
we didn't have an
egg. You smoked the sausage.
Of course, my mother made her own sausages.
Sure. You can imagine the work.
We cook. We'd smoke up a few geese and we'd wrap them with linen, white linen, and strings, you know, and hang them up. They could hang there for months, the whole winter.
Just like the people here make hams, you know.
Yeah, smoked hams.
Smoked hams. Smoked bacon.
And if not for that basement, one day we would have been killed too. We got up after 3 days of shooting between one general army and another general army. There were shootings 3 days, and then we came out of the basement. The roof was like a grader.
Shot through the holes.
Shot through with holes. The windows were broken, and the house was empty. Whatever we had in the basement, we had.
They didn't find you.
They had no time to find us. They had no time. They had to fight one another.
They were fighting one another.
They were chasing one another. See, that ammunition dump was the most important place between Odessa and Kiev. This was the spot.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
We had the ammunition dump and the railroad station to bring it and to take it away. We had plenty of trouble in the kind of that. We were young kids. I'll never forget one day they were robbing our house.
She had that kind of life, and I had the kind of life running around with my father railroading, you know. We'd been all over.
My mother was standing there.
Well, we never had any fighting, anything like that, but we had the experience.
Well, this country doesn't know any bad times because they never had war on their land.
That's what it is.
Do you know what war means on your land?
We never had it here. Not since the Civil War.
Everyone you met in the face that was your neighbor and you thought they were killing you. And they didn't. They did. And our town was quite a prosperous town because the railroad people, there was about 1,400 or 1,500 employees there.
Yeah.
And they would bring in a lot of wages. Their treasurer, their bank was terrific.
And it was a stabilized wage.
It was.
It was
there for years and years.
See, that's what we always had. When there was any hard times, anything, we never knew nothing. We knew nothing about it because my father had a stabilized wage, and he was building railroads. You know, he had gangs and gangs of men. So we never wanted for nothing because he had a stabilized wage.
My Gentile girlfriends, they would go to the. There was a library only for it was a state library. You know, it was a government library, so to speak. So my girlfriends. The Gentile girls, they would go to that library and bring me books to read.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have access.
It all belonged
to the
library. Belongs to the government, for the government employees, like the railroad employees, they had admission, they had library cards.
Yeah,
and they would see, you know, in those years, when I was 14, 15, and 16, I read the Resurrection, the life of Jesus Christ. I read War and Peace.
Oh,
I read Anna Karenina.
I never had no access to library, but my father read. And he would have a catalog, and he'd order these books.
Yeah,
and
but
you think I don't read either.
But not at
and he'd read Dickens and all those classics, you know. And I didn't. I haven't.